Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
KMOX and your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly, but right now, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Questions, comments, or concerns, James will be answering the phone today. He's producing, so all he needs is your first name and where you're calling from. And Mr. Kelly.
Yes.
How about that? Did you have frost this morning?
We did. I had to scrape a little, very thin, but I did have to scrape my windows a little bit, yes.
Isn't that kind of incredible?
It is.
It caught me completely by surprise.
Yes. Yeah, I knew it was going to get cold.
Yes.
And, you know, you're just waiting for spring. It's like, just warm up. You get a few days, and you're like, oh, good, it's over. Well, no, not quite.
Right.
How about the rain this week?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I was, you know, my solar batteries were really getting low.
You mean on your body, or you mean on your...
Mentally, physically, and everything. It was just horrible.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, my God. I even went, you know, took a couple walks in the rain, and... That's a little crazy, but...
Yeah. But that's you.
Yeah.
So how is that going to affect things? Are we in a good position as far as getting ready now that it looks like we're going to be in the 60s this week to get out and start playing in the yard?
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, in some of the early stuff, like I've got some things called penny violets, which are really small, like pansies and things like that. I don't think they did so well.
Oh, really?
That cold.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
They got drowned, and then they got frozen. Yeah, so
man, poor things.
I know.
Doggone, I just go talk to them. You know, say, come on, you can do this. Cheer them on, and they'll be better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We hope.
Okay. I'm the garden guy now.
That's true. It's all yours, my friend.
No, go ahead. You are the expert.
Yes, folks, it is Saturday morning. We can get together and have a roundtable discussion about what's impacting your backyard, your side yard, what's going on with that landscape. How about those downspouts? Gosh, they flush so much moisture out into the landscape, into your yard, into your lawn. Now, when you walk in, it goes squish, 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 squish. What's that going to do? Well, you don't know. Well, we'll find out. How about those houseplants? Hopefully, you didn't stick any outside. Actually, when I was walking the other day, somebody had put out a dracaena, and it was a little bit premature for that, and this was a couple of days ago, and it was dead. So it might be a little bit too early, but you can give it a shot if you would like to. And do you need to improve your soil? Should you be doing any pruning? Should you be removing bugs, thinking about diseases? Well, the information I'll share with you is hopefully will help you orchestrate and solidify your options with a final judgment of the action you're going to take is going to be on your shoulders. And by the way, this is your show, and I appreciate you inviting me into your home as we talk. Or maybe you're in your car, or maybe you're listening to who knows where. There's so many different ways to listen anymore. It is unbelievable. As I said before, James is producing, so when you call, he will answer the phone. I'm Mike Miller, been hosting the Garden Hotline since last century, 1994. Oh, my gosh. I'm really getting old. Anyway, I can come to your home and do a landscape consultation, and that's called a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. The homepage has my email address and phone number where I can be reached. Today, after the show, South St. Louis, actually close to where I live. And, well, let's get moving. The stroll today is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Boing, 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 boing. Bouncing into spring. Ooh, stepping outside this morning. I should have worn more shirts or a coat or something, but I didn't. But anyway, as I was talking to Brian, there was frost on the car windshield. It was thin, yes, but I mean, come on. But winter, I'm not giving up yet. But it is the equinox, and the equinox means tour de yard, and that's where I kind of walk through my yard or our yard and let you know what's going on there. And I'll tell you, the beds between the street and sidewalk, I have sedum acre and yellow moneywort, which is the British way of saying moneywort is just means money plant. Wort means plant and to the Britons, but or it's yellow creeping Jenny. Their foliage is really coloring up and really looks good. I mean, the sedum is such a dark green, and the yellowness is coming up in contrast. So that's kind of nice. And then it's nice to see that because that means winter, it still may be haunting us a little bit, but it's almost over. The bed that I have that's along between the garage and the alleyway, the coneflowers and the ironweed and the sedum and the boxwood, well, they're just barely starting to kind of wake up. Oh, they're kind of still dizzy from winter's nap. And the zoysia in my backyard, the other day, I cut it down to an inch. And so we'll see if by doing that, I've exposed the crowns of the zoysia, and now it's all dead. I won't know for a day or two. Anyway, in the backyard, too, I've got several large pots with the bulbs, and the tulips are really coming up, and they're really shouting, "Hey! We're here, we're fine." Along the north side of the house, Mugo pine, boxwood, and a duet of boxwood and a Leland cypress are a haven for the birds as I put bird seed out on the sidewalk. And boy, man, they come down and up and down and up and down and up. And it's dominated by chickadees is what we're seeing most. Occasional cardinals, a few finches, and oh, some doves too. And along there, too, is where I have a lot of containers with plant material, but basically some sedum and bulbs. So, and then around to the front, that's where my benched patio tulips are sitting there. We got a nice little patio with a nice rocking bench so we can sit and look out over the park, Christie Park. And Christie Park is really greening up. A lot of the wild onions and wild garlics are springing up like insane how fast they can grow. It's just absolutely amazing. And also there is some spring beauty, Clatonia. That's what a year ago Tracy took a picture of the spring beauty in full bloom out there in the park. And then she had a mask made for me with that on it and also says good gardening. Also, there's lots of chickweed, lots of henbit. And the maple trees that we have, the three that go around the corner, they're one of the varieties, sugar maple, that don't bloom quite this early, like some of the red maples and things like that have already bloomed and already dropped the flowers. So there's all kinds of things going on. And also, I want to thank the city for planting six new trees in the park. So, well, yes, welcome to springtime. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
Listening to KMOX has never been easier.
Siri, play KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Every day I take a walk early in the morning, usually kind of pre-dawn now. This daylight savings time doesn't really help the mornings, and I'm a morning person. It is pretty dark early. But anyway, in the afternoon, I take a longer walk for about an hour. And the other day, I walk down Christie Greenway to Loughborough down to Hampton, and Hampton, Finkman, and zigzag back and forth, you know, until I get back home by Christie Park. But I saw a couple yards that really kind of were strikingly different, let's put it that way. This two different yards, not next to each other or anything else, they both had nothing but henbit, which is one of those cool season annual weeds which germinated last August and has purplish flowers right now. It's in the Lamium family, so the stems are square, but the purple flowers and everything else, they're probably about, you know, 2 or 3 inches high. And I mean, it was just a sheet of purple on the front yard of these two yards. So I had to kind of go, wow. And then, of course, right now, the chickweed is exploding. The annual bluegrass, I'm not seeing too much of that. But shepherd's purse, rabbit's foot clover, the Persian speedwell, which is very small, flat, or low-growing and it has blue flowers as opposed to a chickweed that has white flowers. So those are the weeds that germinated last August, and they'll go until the weather starts getting warm, and then they disappear. But they've been dropping seeds the whole time, and then those seeds will lay there until next August. And now it's going to be warm season. Weeds are going to start germinating. The yellow forsythia is in bloom all over the place. So that means the soil temperatures are consistently staying above 50s and kaboom, kabang, kapuff. Anyway, let's head to the phones and let's go over to Donna's yard. Donna, how are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How about yourself?
Very good.
I have one short question and one rather involved. I had last going on 3 years now, somebody planted some trees in my backyard, and I don't think they knew what they did. They planted them with the burlap around the root, and even one of them had a wire basket. I said, no, don't do that. You got to take that apart. And they said, no, we won't cover the tree if it dies. Well, obviously, they're not doing as well anyway. But somebody told me that if I take a hatchet and go to the base of the tree without actually hitting the trunk and kind of hammer down into the soil to cut the roots so that they'll disperse more into the soil, that it would help the trees to get more of those feeder roots. Is that a possibility?
That is crazy.
That's what I thought, too.
You start beating on root systems, you're just going to damage them, especially that close to the trunk. So if this was just regular burlap, it's going to rot away. And the wire basket is not all that much of a problem, at least, for X amount of years until the roots, I don't know what kind of trees these are, but until the roots get extensively large in diameter, and then the wires, but by then probably the wire baskets will even be rotted away. So it's not the best thing to have happen, but if it was a type of burlap that won't rot, hopefully that wasn't the case, then you do have a little bit of a problem.
Well, I had one tree that's dying, and she said it's because the roots are just wrapping around themselves because they didn't open up those branches or those roots at the base of the tree.
But well, if they're larger trees, generally bald and burlap trees are pretty large.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if they took it off, then that would have been fine. But this still could occur just from the simple fact of they were being grown that way in the production nursery. And so they don't just begin from the time that they put them in the ground in your yard. They're not going to start wrapping around each other. They were wrapping around each other prior to that.
I see. Okay. That makes sense. I never heard anybody talk about taking and cutting at the root of the tree, which I always thought would be devastating to the tree itself.
Yes.
Okay. All right. My other fast question. 10 days ago, they put a pre-emergent down on my grass.
Mm-hmm.
When can I plant grass seed?
Find out what exactly variety it was, but usually any place between 14 and 30 days after the pre-emergent was put down.
Well, I'll just make sure it's 30 days before I plant the grass seed. Thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate your help today.
Sure, my pleasure. And the grass seed, I mean, the soil temperature, it could trigger the germination, but grass seed is going to do better when it's planted in April, early May anyway, as far as, growth-wise and triggering the germination and all that other stuff. So good luck with that, Donna. And now let's go from Donna's yard over to David's yard. David lives in Webster. Hi, David.
Oh, howdy. Yeah, what I was interested in? The cold snap that happened a week or so ago, it would seem to me that we might have a great opportunity to deal with some of those invasive species that didn't survive the cold snap. And in fact, since it hit the southern states really hard, many of these invasive species, that have been, whether it's those little fire ants or armadillos or, plants or critters, they may have been wiped out pretty seriously. So I'm thinking about, if we were to get into a mode of restoring what used to be here, is there a kind of a seed bank that, if some county was ravaged by some invasive species and they used to have some plants in there that were very common, but they're getting almost rare, is there a sort of a seed bank that could be drawn from so that a lot of replanting of those native plants would be available?
Well, specifically a seed bank, I would say go to the University of Missouri Extension Service or go to the Missouri Botanical Garden mobot.org and check those websites out and see what they say. I mean, there are certainly nurseries that specialize in selling seeds for native wildflowers and things along that line. But, you know, I mean, it wasn't that cold that it's going to wipe out all that much stuff, to be honest with you.
Well, I'm hearing all those stories about Texas. I mean, it was, 4 degrees up in St. Louis and whatnot. That's fairly cold. But
well, it is, but it's not cold enough to... majority of the plant material can handle that pretty easy.
Uh-huh. Well, if we were to think about, you know, the southern part of the state or even Arkansas, Oklahoma, Texas, that was a cold snap that they hadn't seen in at least a decade.
Right.
And I'm thinking, you know, certain of these invasive species couldn't have possibly survived it. And, regaining ground is kind of what I'm thinking. You know, if there's maybe regional, you know, might just be a couple of counties, but trying to get the native plants going again back in those sections.
Yeah, some people call native plants weeds, depending upon there's growing situation and everything else as well. So you have to understand that that's one of the circumstances. But there are definitely plenty of nurseries that specialize in wildflower plants and wildflower seed. So I would say wherever they live or wherever you're thinking about helping somebody in relationship to this, go to the University Extension Service and find out. I mean, there's Missouri Wildflower Nursery here, in our region, which is, I think its nursery is down close to Columbia, and they specialize in all kinds of wildflower seeds and plant materials, too. But I would say go to the university or go to mobot.org and just see what they recommend as far as in relationship to that.
I could do that. You know, one last thing, as you were calling it weeds and I've got an old history book. It was written back in the 1870s. It's possible it was written in the 1860s. But it says that Missouri, when it became a state, and that would have been 1861, it was the wealthiest state in the nation.
I thought Missouri became a state in 1821.
I thought it was 61, but it could be. But in any case, it was considered the wealthiest state in the nation.
Hmm.
And if it had native plants, if it had, a collection of different plants and animals and, timber and all sorts of different things, what you're calling weeds could have been a very established species that there was cash crop for it.
Sure.
And so I'm always hesitant to call a native plant a weed. It's certainly something that indigenous to a region, there's a purpose for it. So, for example, if we've got so much limestone down in southern, south of the Missouri River, not only would that be a fertile growing ground for certain of those plants and to get fertile, it would then create topsoil. When I was, a kid and doing a lot of camping down there, there's just an inch or so of topsoil. It was pretty miserable.
Right.
And it
well,
was
thanks, David. I greatly appreciate your insight. So just check out the Missouri Botanical Garden website and kind of take it from there. So from David's yard, let's head over to Scott, and Scott lives in Glen Carbon. Hi, Scott.
Hi there. How are you, sir?
Very good.
Good. Just a quick question for you. I heard you talking about the forsythia bushes earlier. That's kind of been a marker for me. I'm kind of switching over from having a company take care of my lawn to doing things myself. And I was looking at one of the forsythia bushes by me. I've got a place right up the road from me. They're not blooming yet here, but I guess you answered my question. I was going to ask about what time to put the pre-emergent down.
Right. And, a good way to do it is to get a soil thermometer. They're not that expensive. And just when you start to see the soil temperatures consistently several days in a row get above 50 degrees, that's, an indicator, too. Even so, if you don't have forsythia close by, then this is that's a scientific way to do it.
Well, yeah, I've been watching the bushes up the road from me, and I haven't seen them bloom yet. So I was kind of wondering what was going on here. You were saying you saw some blooming, so
right.
I guess any time now would be safe to do it.
Right. It's getting pretty good because, I mean, the ones that I saw were on the south side of the houses. So as I was walking down the street, so there was also star magnolias, which is a white flower magnolia. I saw several of those in bloom. In other areas where the plantings was on the north side, that the yard, the soil temperature is going to be cooler on that side, and so consequently, they're not necessarily going to be blooming. So, I mean, exposure has a heck of a lot to do with it. Reflective heat from buildings, from, you know, the ground warming up off from the streets and sidewalks. So there's all kinds of factors other than just, let's say, the temperature that affects, you know, your soil's, what the warmth or heat of your soil is going to be.
Good. Well, the other one quick other question I had, too, I was noticing that my neighbors, even though I use this company, their lawns seem to be greening up. Mine's a little bit on the tan side. It's starting to green up. But do you think those four-step programs are worth the investment?
Well, it's your perspective. Yours, I mean, if you have a cool season lawn like a fescue or bluegrass, it should be green. It shouldn't have gone brown. So if you got brown, then that either means that you have zoysia or that you have had a major disaster with your lawn just in general.
I gotcha. I probably need to do a little more investigation with it to kind of see what's going on.
Right, because if you have zoysia, then you're going to fertilize in the summertime versus in the fall and early winter time as you do with the cool season lawns. It's a completely, you know, flip in a total different direction.
I see. Well, that answers that question. I appreciate your time, sir. Thank you.
My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Cardinal spring training is underway in Jupiter, Florida, and KMOX's Mike Claiborne is covering it all. Hear his daily reports, mornings and afternoons, and on Cardinals Open Line, sponsored in part by Norm's Bargain Bar and Wilkie Windows, on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
Rock on. And, you know, realize as soil temperatures warm up, that means earthworms are going to start moving. And so when earthworms start moving, there is a potential, if you've had a history of moles in your landscape, then the moles are going to be going after the earthworms. That is their main source of food. They eat grubs, yes, but grubs don't move, so they can't hear anything. So what it is moles hear the sound of earthworms tunneling through the soil, and that's how they tunnel towards that sound. They come across a grub as they're tunneling, perfect. It's an appetizer, but it is not their main diet. So watch out for mole activity. And if you need a professional service or you want to get some traps yourself, or plenty of people will call and say, I just sit out in the yard, and when I start to see an area pop up on the surface, I know that's where the mole is tunneling right then. I take a shovel, I dig him up out of the ground, and then, you know, or whatever. Let's head over to Tom's yard, and he lives in St. Louis. Hi, Tom.
Hi, can you hear me, Mike?
Yes.
I have a couple questions. Now, you said earlier that if your bluegrass fescue turns brown, you've suffered a catastrophic event. That what you said?
Well, it could be, potentially, because they're supposed to be, they're a cool season lawn, and this is their best time of year. Unless there's been a lot of salt, you know, from, let's say, putting it on the streets or on your driveway or on your sidewalks, areas where along there, I mean, that could be salt burn due to the wintertime, but we didn't really have all that much snow.
Well, for the last 3 or 4 years, I've been aerating compost, overseed, you know, not specifically in that order, obviously, but aerating, overseed, composting. Rake it in really well, and then, you know, put straw over the top of it. And I usually get a good result for about a month. And then, because of dog urine and, you know, my basic question is there a soil test that I can use that's fairly inexpensive that can tell me whether or not I have some type of a mold issue I guess that's what my question is.
Yeah, generally, soil tests won't indicate mold. They indicate what's in your soil. So they're not going to say if you have a fungus problem or things like that. They don't have that capabilities. So a soil test would say, well, maybe you've been, you know, if you've been fertilizing, you fertilize with the same fertilizer too consistently. You have high levels of nitrogen or potassium or phosphorus or whatever it happens to be, and that could be detrimental. Or your soil pH. Lawns, people for years thought lawns liked an alkaline or a, let's say a salty sort of soil circumstance, which is wrong. Lawn does best when their soil pH is below 7, which is neutral, about 6.5. So all those years people were putting lime on their lawn without knowing what the pH was, they were going detrimental to having a successful lawn. So there's all kinds of factors, but a soil test won't say anything about in relationship to bacteria, fungus, or molds, or anything like that.
So I haven't really fertilized much, so I'm sure it's not an over-fertilization problem. I don't know if you can over-compost or not.
Generally not compost. That won't do it. But maybe you've under-fertilized. Okay. Maybe there's not enough nutrients there. So a soil test would indicate you're lacking blah, 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 whatever. You know, like I said, the big three, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And also, you know, the reason why where female dogs go to the bathroom or, you know, urinate is they have a high concentration of nitrogen in their urine. That's what burns spots in your lawn.
Yeah. Now that much I do know, you know, I know that for a fact. All right, well, I guess I'll give it one more shot and then maybe just tear the whole thing out and start all over again with 4 inches of new topsoil.
Well, just I would get a soil test done. Soil tests are only like $25.
Where would I do that?
You can go, you know, there's an office in Kirkwood for the University of Missouri. You can drop soil samples off there. There's some in other, you know, locations, but the one I see, you're 314, so you're probably in this part of the city or this part of the region or whatever. So just go to the University of Missouri Extension Service and look for where the Kirkwood office is.
Okay, one last question. Is one type of mulch more resistant to insects than another?
Basically, mulch doesn't attract insects. I mean, if it's been, you know, if it's been properly done, if you're talking about termites or anything like that, then it's not going to be problematic. If it's just wood chips off a truck that just recently took a tree down in the neighborhood, that's not good stuff, because what that does is has a detrimental effect, because as that starts breaking down, it binds up nutrients and moisture both and can cause damage to the plant material that you spread it around.
Okay, well, just mulch from the nursery, mulch from St. Louis Composting. Are you saying that's detrimental?
No, it's not, because they do it correctly.
And what's the correct way?
As far as like how long they keep it, how they rotate it, all that kind of stuff, how they turn it over.
Well, so mulch that you see that's actually smoking on the back of a truck, is that mulch too fresh to really put down?
No, because that indicates it's actually, let's say, got natural heat to it. Fresh stuff won't smoke or create steam.
I gotcha. All right. Okie-doke. Good enough. Thank you, Mike.
Certainly. And let's head over to Millstat and go into Eric's yard. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for your service.
Sure.
I've just got a couple questions. The main one with this frost that we had here, I've got a lot of tulips, and I was concerned, is there anything I should do if that frost would have hurt that? And another question I've got is that I had put some compost down primarily in my garden and around some plants before we got all that rain. So I guess that should have helped. It was a heavier type of compost.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. Just the depth of the compost, you know, compost is not really a mulch to put it on the surface. Compost is really something that should go into the ground, not on top of the ground, first of all.
Yeah, I actually rotatilled that compost.
Okay, then that's
the
perfect. You've done everything.
Garden. Okay. And about the tulips?
Are they in flower or are they just the foliage?
No, they're just the green, just the foliage.
Yeah, if anything, you might get a little tip burn on the leaf. But I don't even think it's going to be damaging to any of the, whether daffodils or tulips or crocus or, you know, whatever happens to be blooming. I don't think that it was not that detrimental as far as temperature-wise.
Okay, and the last question, you know, as far as that soil testing, is there a place to have it tested in Illinois?
Yes, there's a company in Belleville that does soil testing.
Okay. Okay, thanks for service.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
My pleasure. And 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We have phone lines open, and we'll be back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, if you do have some forsythia or as other things that are spring blooming shrubs, finish flowering, that's the time when you want to prune to control size, shape, or whatever it happens to be. If you prune too soon before they've flowered, consequently, you're not going to have the flowers. So that's a disadvantage. It doesn't kill them or anything. It just makes it so you don't get the flowers. This is a time of year to also, with your perennials, your hosta, your asters, your sassa daisies, daylilies, when they start coming up out of the ground, you find that you see exactly where they are. If you want to divide them, this is the time of year to do that as well. Let's head to Arnold and go into Scott's yard. Hi, Scott.
Test report, but I don't really know what I'm looking at. It says that my the phosphorus, potassium, calcium, magnesium are all in the medium to high range. What I'm not sure what to put down on the yard after looking at this.
Basically, I missed the first part of your question, but I'm assuming it's related to a soil test. But you just want to make sure whatever you put down doesn't have those elements in it.
Okay, it says the phosphorus is like 114, potassium's 244, calcium's 3,800, magnesium's 524.
Yeah, the numbers doesn't mean anything. It should say extravagant and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, so then how do I know what to put down? Just something that's not medium or high that's there?
Yeah, something. So in other words, if that's the case with phosphorus and potassium, if you had, and it's saying you have extravagant or high levels of that, you want to have, let's say, a 12, 4-4 or something, numbers where the last two numbers on a bag of fertilizer, the major numbers, that's a phosphorus and potassium. You want to have those as low as you possibly can find.
Okay. So is that stuff from St. Louis Compost that I hear you talk about sometimes, that it's real low? Is that a good thing to put down?
Yeah, their fertilizer, if that's what you're talking about, I forget the exact numbers, but it's like 2-4-4 or something along that line, and it's an organic.
Right, and that's so that would be good for that.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Certainly. And always your soil test is going to indicate that your nitrogen level is really low, because nitrogen will stay in the ground or on the ground as it melts down into the soil for a few days. And then after that, guess what? It goes up into the air. So that's why after rainfalls and things like that, your nitrogen level can be a little bit higher as a result, because it's coming down out of the sky. But it doesn't stay on the ground hardly, but very few days, and then it becomes, you know, airborne. Let's put it that way. Now let's go over to Mary's yard. Mary lives in St. Louis. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
My question is about mulch, because I'm a little confused about, do we have to mulch twice a year? Because I'm thinking, if you mulch in the fall and you've got that layer, and then you want to put down pre-emergent, you got to pull the mulch back, right? And then, I mean, do you have to take it all up, or?
Well, generally, if you put a mulch down, there shouldn't, and I mean, let me put it this way. Around perennials, you want the mulch about 2 inches. Trees and shrubs, you want it about 4 inches or so. So consequently, that's going to really limit the amount of, let's say, weed seeds that can survive in the wintertime to be able to come up. So it's not necessary to put down a pre-emergent over the top of your mulch.
Well, it wouldn't do any good if you put it on top, would it?
Well, basically, it's got to, you know, your pre-emergent, I don't know, have you had a weed problem in the areas you're talking about? Annual weed problem.
Yeah. Well, yes, I guess they're annual, because they're not there in the winter. Okay. Right now I have, and I'm not good at identifying, but I have like some little green, they're green, like rounded you know, low to the ground things popping up through the mulch.
So if that's the case, probably what I'd do is I'd just use an herbicide and kill those things off, as opposed to using a pre-emergent, because a pre-emergent is not going to do for anything to plant material that's already growing.
I know, but if I went to address the ones that do come up during the summer, I guess, I mean, do I have to pull the mulch back and get it directly on the soil? And then?
No, I wouldn't bother doing that. That's too extreme.
It does seem like okay. So I can, but if you put it on top of the mulch, will it work?
Basically not, because the seed is going to germinate on the soil.
Right.
And so that's below the mulch, and then it's, as it grows up and comes up where you can visually see it, it's already germinated. So if you put, let's say you pull the mulch back, you put the pre-emergent down. When you push the mulch back on top of it, what pre-emergent does is create a chemical barrier, a consistent barrier. And so once you push the mulch back on it, you're breaking that barrier potential up. And so that you're kind of going contrary to what a pre-emergent is supposed to do. So I would say if you've got stuff coming up in the mulch, use post-emergent herbicides as opposed to a pre-emergent.
Okay. So not to worry about pre-emergent, just deal with the weeds as they pop up.
Right. Exactly. Okay. That's much, much better and, you know, makes much more sense.
Okay. All right. I just got confused listening to all this. I'm thinking, wow, I just laid this mulch last fall. Now do I have to pull it back and put pre-emergent? Because I do have a problem in those beds. So... okay, I guess I'll just deal with them as they come up.
Yes, that's the best way to do it. And if you, you know, if it's close to plant material that you're concerned with, what you need to do is just take, you know, an herbicide, whatever, Weed Be Gone or whatever you're going to plan on using, and have a jar of it, and just take a paintbrush and paint it right on the weeds if you're worried about spraying so it doesn't drift on anything. That's an easier way to do it. And I, what I do is I do a lot of hand weeding personally. So right. I do both, but I'd have to say most of the stuff I'd hand weed.
Yeah, I do too, but that I was hoping maybe an easier way, but I guess it's not. So
nothing is easy, you know that.
No, I know you're right. not for lawn care and gardening, apparently.
No, apparently, yes, you're exactly right. Because you can go down to the botanical garden where they have huge staff. Well, I shouldn't say huge, but they have knowledgeable staff there all the time, 5 days a week, and they can still have you know, eruptions of plant material, you know, weed-wise and other things, even though they're there. So that's going to happen. That's just our weather is part of that, you know, that factor, and other things as well.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for the clarification.
Sure.
I appreciate your show so much.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. I appreciate it. If you do happen to be growing asparagus, this is a time when you want to get rid of all the weeds out there and also cut down all the old growth of your asparagus. So make sure you don't have a bunch of that. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I will be back after the news.
KMOX and your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, it is the garden what? Hotline tip trowel? I don't know what it is. No, tip of the trowel hour, and I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. And Mr. Kelly, I know you're a bird expert. are you still getting the finches coming for your thistle seed?
The finches are back. They like the sunflowers almost as much.
Really?
Yeah, they'll get in there and get the sunflowers as well.
Now, this is small black sunflower seed?
That's pretty good size. It's not the big striped ones.
Okay.
I got those one time, but that's not, no. Right. I get the regular, what do they call it, something oil.
Yeah.
Black oil, sunflower seeds.
Right.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize that they'd go for that. Because I put thistle seed out on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
And I got finches early, but I'm not getting finches now. I get hundreds of chickadees.
Yeah. Yeah,
but,
a lot of chickadees.
That's pretty much it. They
seem to go over to the other ones as well. Now, they kind of disappeared after the snow for a while, a few days, but now they're back. And yesterday I had to kind of partially refill them again. So
All right.
It's kind of hit and miss a little bit. I don't know what the deal is. Did they get enough before that they didn't need to come for a while, or they find a new source? Oh, this is better. I don't know what the deal is.
They don't want to get it off the ground. These seeds could be dirty. They're on the sidewalk.
Exactly. We had a new bird this week, an Eastern Towhee, which it's black, and its wings are kind of, if I remember right, the wings area, like the sides of the breast, look like robins, but the front is white.
What?
So, and then what they do is they'll get it down on, they eat on the ground, and they jump backwards to move the stuff on top, like the topsoil or the leaves or whatever,
right,
and then go underneath and dig in there to get their
stuff. Pretty smart.
So yeah, they're kind of fun to watch.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
You bet.
And folks, by the way, thanks for having me on your show. We can discuss plant selection, caring for the ups and downs and all around to the annuals. As I said at the beginning of the first hour, I have some penny violets, which are the small, like pansy flowers, only the flowers are really small. And I'm going to be interested to see how they made it through. I mean, they were not looking well as a result of all the rain that was coming for those 3 days in a row. So we'll see if the cold had anything impactful to them. Edibles also, I got some, not that I was going to necessarily eat it, but some red lettuce. And the red lettuce still looks pretty darn good. It hasn't shown any signs of, over moisture from the rain or whatever else. And 3 days of no sun. And how about your houseplants, your lawn, your perennials, your roses, your trees, your shrubs, your vines, your water gardens, your bulbs, all kinds of stuff going on. And I'll share my opinions and answers and comments, but it's certainly not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered for you to consider. Across the big board is James, and he will be answering the phone. He's producing, and so he just needs your first name and where you're calling from. During the week and weekends, I spend time doing a walk and talk, which is a landscape consultation. And today after the show, I'm headed to South St. Louis, and I got them all over the place. Next Wednesday, I'm headed over to Waterloo. And I'll share 40-plus years of experience with your home's landscape design, care, and maintenance of the plant material. Tip of the trowel goes is a special recognition of individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the trowel goes out to all the fire pitters that live in my neighborhood. Christie Park's right across the street. And, there's some large mature trees and everything else. And there's some, high winds and knock some branches down and stuff like that. I'm just amazed at how many people, and I'm assuming they're cutting this, they're going out, they're bringing the branches, larger branches, cutting them up into pieces and taking them home. And I'm assuming they're using them in their fire pits. Because as we walk through the neighborhoods, it is amazing how many people have fire pits in their backyards. It's just absolutely incredible. So tip of the trowel goes out to all those people with fire pits that are helping clean Christie Park up from all the fallen branches from the winds and the trees and everything else. So thanks to you for doing that. So we'll take a call or two before we go to break. Let's head out to Wentzville and go into Rick's yard. Hi, Rick.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, I got three questions. The first one is, all the plants that, we brought in for the wintertime, when do you think would be a good time to bring them back outside?
Well, the frost-free date, in theory, is like mid-April. So, in theory, we could have cold weather all the way up to that point. But that's probably a little bit exaggerated. I would say, sometime within the next probably week or two, you could probably take them outside. I've got two major big plants that I take outside that are so heavy, I was thinking about taking him out, real soon and just putting him in the garage in front of a window until I was sure the weather was going to be a little bit better. But I would say probably 1st of April would be the soonest I would do it.
Okay. Second, I've got an area that has phlox. I think that's what it's called, those little purple plants or little purple flowering ground cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I got grass like growing out of the middle of it. And is there any way to get rid of the grass without killing the phlox?
Basically use a grass killer. Grass killers will only kill narrow bladed plants, and phlox is considered a broadleaf plant. So it will kill the grass without damaging your phlox. I wouldn't do it when it's in flower, but I would do it after it flowers.
After it flowers. When does, I don't, I'm not that familiar with it. What time of year would that be?
Well, are you talking about phlox that grows as a ground cover? Then it's kind of looks really spiky.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically they should be flowering within the next couple of weeks and finishing flowering, you know, a week or two after it starts.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I thought there was something maybe that they constantly went all summer long.
No. No.
Okay. All right. The third thing I got is, I'm not that familiar with plants, obviously, but I've got a climbing, like a vine that has these purple flowers on it. And I kind of looked it up a little bit, and I think it might be like a clematis.
Certainly could be.
Over the wintertime, you know, of course it goes dormant, and it looks dead. I mean, it's just a bunch of brown, tangled stems, basically. It's not
right.
A very thick. How do you prepare that for springtime? Do I cut it all off, or do I? Because it's starting to flower now out of things that look like they're dead, but they're, you know, you're starting to get little purple flowers coming out. So I don't want to kill it, but it looks. I'm sure I'm not maintaining it properly.
Well, it's a little early for clematis to be in flower. But if it is clematis, you don't have to prune it at all. It just, you know, understand that it kind of looks ugly in the wintertime. But then in the summertime, it's always going to be kind of open and wispy and things like that. It's not going to be thick and dense.
Mm-hmm.
So
all those brown, tangled, you know, branches are...
Yeah, stems, right.
Those are...
Any
those
of them that
directly alive?
Yeah, any of them that come, you know, as let's say we get into like mid to late May, if you see any of those sections or areas, you're always going to know that the bottom part of the clematis, bottom 3 feet coming up out of the ground, is never going to have leaves on it. It's only going to have leaves higher up. So you can selectively prune out the ones that don't have any leaves, but make sure that there's no leaves on the end of the twig or the branch or whatever. So you don't cut that off. You don't really have to prune it at all.
Oh, just let it go and it'll kind of take care of itself.
Right.
Huh? All right. That's about covers it. Well, thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Weekday mornings at 8:30, Charlie Brennan and Amy Markscores provide perspective on KMOX and KMOX.com.
Party on, folks, and we're headed to Town and Country, and we're going into Tom's yard. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I have a few questions for you. So last fall, I went down a crabgrass killer and killed all the crabgrass in the yard. And so I have a really big, it's right next to a driveway area of just, it doesn't look like when I overseeded last year that it took off. And so I didn't know how to prepare that to put seed down, if I needed to till it, or if I could just put some compost and some seed.
You're going to have to.
What do you think?
Yeah, you're going to have to scarify at least the surface of the soil, because it's going to be so compacted because it's next to a surface. And, you know, basically you get out of your car, people get out of the car and compact that down. So that is a very, very tough area to grow grass in anyway.
Okay. Well, I mean, she had grass there before, and the crabgrass took over because she didn't do any fertilizer or anything for a lot of years.
Yeah, but crabgrass is an annual warm season, you know, which basically the seed germinates now. You could have killed it off in the fall, but it had been dropping seed, you know, so just realize that just because you think you killed it off in the fall or whenever you did, the seed could be there, and it's, you know, when the forsythia is in bloom, that's when it starts germinating.
So basically what I should do is just till this up and then scrape off all that dirt that's there that would have the seeds, and then put new compost down and new seed?
Yeah, I would probably put a compost topsoil blend. I don't know if I'd bother trying to scrape it off, because I don't know if that's going to make that much difference. Just realize, you know, go ahead, get the soil prepared and get the grass seed down and just kind of go from there.
Okay. The other question that I have, I think I'm kind of piggybacking off of the gentleman that just called about I can't remember the name of the plant that he had grass growing through it. And you said that just a regular grass killer would work?
Right. He had creeping phlox.
Okay. So my question is there some sedum Would it be the same? But the thing is, it's not just regular grass. It's that nuts hedge grass.
Okay.
Kind of a booger.
Right.
Is there anything that you can spray on that to kill it without killing the sedum?
Yeah, there is a nut grass killer, which will specifically go after that. And it's kind of surprising because the nut grass needs a moister soil. Sedum needs a drier soil. And for those to both to be together, that's kind of an odd circumstance.
I know. I thought so, too. And then one last thing is that same gentleman that called, do you think maybe he had some periwinkle growing in there with his clematis? Because they're coming up right now of that color.
Yeah, but he said it was climbing. So I'm assuming, clematis to be blooming this time of year totally caught me by surprise. But,
right.
The periwinkle is going to be, an evergreen ground cover that grows flat on the ground. I don't think you can make that climb. And if it does climb, it's still going to be evergreen. And so consequently, when he said it's just bare sticks and twigs and all this other stuff, that's why I assumed I couldn't figure out exactly what, kind of plant that was.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking if it was on the ground, he might be thinking that it's coming because everything was dead and that could be periwinkle. Anyway, if he was still listening, he may want to just look at that flower and see if it's a periwinkle flower.
Yeah, because a periwinkle can be blooming right now. I've seen it in a couple different places.
It's blooming in my yard.
Oh, great.
All right. Well, listen, have yourself a great day, Mike. Appreciate your information.
Sure. You'll do the very same thing. And now let's go into Kirkwood and see what's going on with Mark. Hi, Mark.
Well, good morning. I have a question about mulch. So I landscape my front and backyard with the Vigoro bag mulch from, the Home Depot. I like the brown mulch. I do every other year, the front yard, then the opposite year I do the backyard. So I just mulched up or roughed up my mulch. I kind of mulch. Rough it up during the spring to make it look nice. But I, on the backyard, which I didn't put mulch in last year, I saw as I roughed it up a little white fungus underneath. Should I be worried about that?
Generally, probably I wouldn't be overly concerned with it, no. But just understand that, that can certainly happen. How deep are you putting your mulch down?
Probably about 2 inches, maybe 3.
Yeah, that should be, adequate. Is a shady backyard or a sunny backyard?
Sunny backyard.
Yeah, so, I wouldn't be overly concerned with, some kind of surface type, say fungus or bacteria or whatever this white stuff is.
Okay, and should I do it every year or is it just aesthetics?
Basically, it's an aesthetic type thing. Because, in the, let's say the two-year circumstance or cycle, it should, be melting down during that time.
So and it does. It goes away somewhere.
Right. It actually melts and goes into the ground. It's a, biodegradable product, let's put it that way.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mike.
Sure. Bye. My pleasure. And now let's see. Where should we go? How about to Lisa's yard? And she lives in Arnold. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Mike. Thank you so much for your service. Yes, I would like to plant a dogwood tree. I was hoping to do it this spring. And our yard, our house sits kind of on a hill. And the water, when we get a good rain, kind of comes down and it runs down this area to the side of the house to the street. If I wanted to plant the tree there, would that extra water that we get through there every time we have a big rain, would that be detrimental to planting a tree? Would that not be a good idea?
Well, a dogwood doesn't like wet soils.
Oh, okay.
So that's where the problem would be.
Okay.
I mean, there are trees that can handle, like a sweet bay magnolia. There are certain trees that can handle wet soils, but dogwood is definitely not one.
Have to find a different spot for a dogwood, then.
Right, exactly.
So, okay, well, I didn't want to plant one and then, lose it down the road because it was a bad place for it to be. So.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sure, and there are the native dogwoods, and there are also the Japanese dogwood, which blooms a couple weeks later than our native dogwood. And then there's the pinks and the reds as well as the whites as far as the dogwoods go. So.
Right. Well, I had a beautiful pink dogwood at a former home that we lived in, and I want to get another one because it was just absolutely beautiful. So I got to just figure out a different spot for it. So.
Right, exactly.
Okay, thank you very much.
Right.
Have a good day.
And thank you and for giving me a call. Let's go to Steve's yard in Richmond Heights. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good.
Last fall, we planted in a large area of our backyard, we planted some tall fescue, and we covered it over with a compost topsoil mix, and it came up pretty well. But now it looks very thin. There's a lot of space in between, and so I'm thinking of putting some more seed down. And my question is, if I put the seed down, what steps should I take? I've bought some of these straw mats thinking I would lay that out over the seed to keep it in place, but I'm afraid that I may smother the existing new grass that came up last fall.
Right.
What would you suggest?
I would say stay away from that stuff.
Okay.
And anytime you're doing, and this is for anyone, if you're doing seeding, it's going to take several years of overseeding twice a year, basically, let's say late April, early May, and again in September, of several years to get a thick lawn. So putting seed down one time is never going to give you a thick lawn, even though it looks like, or you're thinking you're throwing seed down so close together that it's going to make it so you have a thick lawn like a piece of sod. That's not going to happen.
Okay, thanks. The second question, cutting back knockout roses, when's the best time to do that?
Anytime. Basically, get it done soon because you want to do it before the new growth begins.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. I appreciate the information.
Sure. And for all the roses and everything, pull the mulch, start pulling the mulch back away from them. It's not that critical with the shrub type roses like the knockouts, but definitely hybrid teas and grandifloras, pull the mulch back. But get the pruning done before you start to see the buds break. And where I'm talking about leaf buds, not flower buds. So thanks, Steve. And now let's see if we can get another call in. Let's go to Linda in Oakville. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I'm a new grower of clematis, and I called you, several weeks ago about it. But I have a question now for spring. I checked on it, and it's alive, but I made a mistake of putting oak tree leaves around it to mulch it. But if that's okay, I'll take all those off. And I wanted to know, first of all, when should I feed it? And I know you said it likes the alkaline soil, so I guess I could use Miracle-Gro for non-acid plants. And what would be a good thing, kind of a little mulch to put on around it? Would like a wood mulch be good? And what should I put on it next fall for winter? Like to keep it alive.
Yeah, I mean, the root system, the clematis are pretty tough. So, 1 or 2 inches of mulch, doesn't really matter which one that you're actually going to use, but just make sure it's mulch and not compost.
Okay, don't put compost on it.
Right. Because it's just putting compost on the surface is not what compost is supposed to be used for. It's supposed to go in the ground, not on top of the ground.
Right. I mainly have compost like in there from the past anyway. It's
right.
Good soil. And then when should I start feeding it now that the leaves, it's budding out?
So if the leaves are actually starting to come out, you could start, fertilizing and just fertilize once a month with no fertilizing after, let's say, June.
Oh, okay. So April, May, June. Okay. And my other question is, I know you're supposed to fertilize. I have a lot of really old-time daffodil bulbs that have bloomed for years. They were my mom's. So would it be a good idea to feed them now? I mean, they're blooming. They're beautiful. To feed them, and that's what I use, too. It's like liquid Miracle-Gro, but with all the water we've already received, would this be a bad time to feed them, or what should I do with those?
They should be. I mean, if they came up and their foliage looks good and they're flowering, you could go ahead. Probably what I'd do in the future is as soon as the flower buds start coming up, I'd fertilize them then. And again, feed them twice, again, 1 month apart. So as soon as you start to see the foliage comes up, because that's going to be pretty early on, it sounds like, in your yard. And because of the exposure or whatever it happens to be. But just 2 fertilizations with a just all-purpose fertilizer, which Miracle-Gro is.
Right on the kiln for Dexter. Thank you, Mike, for all your help.
Great. My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
If I was listening to this music, I would think of Cape Girardeau. And what a coincidence. That's where Josh lives. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Mike, long-time listener, first-time caller. Thanks very much for doing the show. I love it.
Well, thanks for having me.
You bet. Mike, I burned some ornamental grasses the other day that was close to a arborvitae tree that I've got, and it looks like the leaves have some heat damage. Should I trim those leaves back, or what would you suggest?
I would just leave them, and they're going to fall off if they're going to be dysfunctional. If aesthetically you want to get rid of them, you can go ahead and just, you know, prune the individual leaves. But just, you know, my concern would be the stem more so than the leaves. And so consequently, you know, you could take your fingernail or your thumbnail and scrape the stem where these leaves are showing sign of the burn and see if it's green underneath the bark. If it is, then that's, you know, that stem's okay.
Okay. Very good. Okay, Mike. Well, I really appreciate the information.
Well,
great
thanks.
Show. Thank you.
Sure. And let's see, where should we go now? How about let's go to Maureen's yard, and she lives in St. Louis. Hi, Maureen.
Hello. Happy spring.
Same to you.
Thank you. I have a question about raised bed gardening. Number one, this is an easy one, I think, for you, not for me. How high should I have them? I'm thinking maybe 18 inches. Is that sound reasonable?
Well, it all depends on what you want to do. Are you putting, you know, that means you're going to have boards or a real side onto the thing.
Right.
Raised bed just means elevating it above the surrounding ground. So you could add a compost topsoil mix, you know, 3 or 4 inches and just elevate it that much.
No, I have to have it with the boards. That's why I'm trying to keep the cost down by keeping it as low as I can.
Okay.
Because boards cost so much right now.
So what are you going to be growing? You know?
Vegetables, not too many root vegetables, maybe like radishes, beets, and carrots.
Okay. What you should do is decide where you want to have this, churn that area up, kill the, you know, any kind of existing vegetation that's there, then build the siding. 12 inches should be adequate. Just make sure that you, you rototill the area before you put, you know, the boards up and then backfill it with the, you know, the mixture that you're going to use.
Okay, and that's my second question. So I've heard that, like, mulch, if I was going to mulch under it for drainage purposes, that I should use, like, an arborist wood chips. Is that correct?
No, I would not put mulch underneath it like that. I would just work this, unless this is a spot that's really been wet and doesn't drain or something like that. If you just rototill the area up, that should be adequate.
Okay, my last question. I wanted to get some mulch and compost mix from the have it delivered. Is there a ratio? I mean, because we don't have any dirt, and I'm going to use not only that for the raised beds. I'm going to have three of them, but I also have a bunch of dirt in the on the patio that needs to be, you know, we have like bordered stuff that needs to be redone. And I was growing vegetables in there last year, but now I need to get more. So I need to know what the ratio is. I've seen so many different things, and I figured you would know.
Well, there is no technically a ratio. If you're just trying to improve the soil, just adding 1 to 2 inches of a topsoil compost mix and mix that in with the existing soil should be adequate.
So I should just order compost topsoil mix?
Yeah.
Instead of like mulch and compost?
Yes, you don't want mulch and compost.
Okay. Well, geez. That's great. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate your being on the radio for us.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me on your show. If you were not there, I would not be here. So
okay, thanks, Mike.
Sure. And now let's head to St. Charles, and that's where Nancy lives. Hi, Nancy.
Hey there. How are you doing?
Good.
I have a question about our crepe myrtle bushes. They're relatively new. I think they've been planted for maybe 2 years. How do I know if they survive through the winter? I don't see any signs of life yet.
Well, the majority of things that are deciduous, which crepe myrtles are not showing many signs of life. A little bit of bulb, you know, bud sort of swellings, but for the most part, that's, you know, a rarity more so than anything else. There's some things, but I would say, you know, don't worry about it.
Okay, so at what point in time do I start thinking, these didn't make it?
If you're not seeing any active growth along the stem, and it's originally going to be just foliage coming off the stems by mid-May, then that's not a good sign.
But, all right.
Other than that, I would say you're probably fine. They're pretty
tough. Okay, great. That's what I needed.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
And now let's see. Where should we go? How about Edwardsville? We haven't been there today. And see what's going on with Sharon. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Mike. Happy spring to you.
Same to you.
I was wondering if you could give me some advice on trimming back oak leaf hydrangeas, and how far back do I need to cut them back when I do so?
Why are you cutting them?
They're just too tall.
Oh, because, I mean, that's their genetics. So, I mean, if you want to go ahead and prune them, you could go ahead and prune them now. They bloom in the summertime, correct?
Correct.
So anything that blooms in the summertime, you prune now. Before the, because what happens is if you wait until the new growth starts, that's where the flower buds are going to be with the new growth for any summer bloomer. Then you prune it, then you cut off the flowers for this year.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you, Mike.
Yep. And I don't know how tall or how much you're going to take off, but probably whatever height they are, I wouldn't take off more than one third of the maximum or the total height.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Sure.
Have a good day.
You do the same thing. And now we've been to Winsville once, but let's go back and see what's going on with Barb. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Mike. Two questions, of course. In the Jackman clematis, do you trim the vine back?
Clematis doesn't need any kind of pruning.
Well, I know that, but this Jackman is interwoven in my bushes. It's a volunteer.
Oh.
But just leave it there. Okay, all of dead vine. Also, if I move Stella's now, the ground's cold where I'm moving it to. They'll do all right. Move them now?
Yeah, I mean, they should be. The ground is, you know, should be adequate enough. You're talking about Stella D'Oro daylilies, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so basically moving them while they're the foliage is just coming up, you can see where they are.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so this would be an adequate time and a good time to be able to go ahead and do it. You're not going to expect a wide expanse of growth. Just make sure that you're moving them to an area where it's going to be sunny. And that's all you need to do.
Thank you.
Yeah, and just make sure that you improve the soil first, too. So adding organic matter, even though daylilies are tough and durable, you see them growing along roadways and everything else, improving the soil is going to help.
True. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
And now let's see if we can get another call. Let's go to Troy, and that's Ken's yard. Hi, Ken.
How are you doing today?
Good.
I've got some sour cherry trees that I need to fertilize. I live on a rocky hilltop with pretty poor soil. And I do get some cherries off of them, but I'd like to fertilize them. Don't know what type of fertilizer to use and the proper way to do it.
I would say you're probably better off to do something called deep root feeding, where you auger holes and backfill those holes with compost as opposed to just fertilizing the tree. So in other words, you're going to feed the soil, then the soil is going to feed your trees. Fertilizing trees is not necessarily something that's going to make that much difference.
Okay. And then one more question. I have a sweet spire that's about 18 years old that's just gone amok on me. Can I just cut it back to nothing and see what happens, or what's the proper way to take care of that?
Yeah, I would, again, if you cut it back severely, recovery may not happen, because you understand that the leaves that the sweet spire has actually helps create and keep the root system healthy. If you eliminate the majority of the foliage, the leaves, then there's not going to be any chlorophyll made, so consequently the plant could just starve as a result of not being able to have any food made because of the majority of the foliage is gone.
So when it's spreading, sending a lot more stems out of the ground.
Right.
I mean, can I just cut a bunch of those off, or decrease the size of the plant and just leave the tall stalks then?
Yeah, you could do it either way. Generally, with types of shrubs, what you're speaking of. Taking out the largest stems coming up out of the ground, you could certainly do that. It is a spreader. It is a colonizer. So that's what you're experiencing. You can cut those off too. But just understand there's still going to be the root system underneath the ground, and it's going to continuously, produce new growth at the base because that's its genetics.
Okay. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We have a couple phone lines open. Let's head over to Tony's yard. Hi, Tony.
Mike, how you doing? Good morning.
Very good.
I've always, in the spring, I've never put down pre-emergent, okay? And I know you've mentioned in the past that you don't put it down until the forsythias are blooming.
Right.
I haven't noticed that yet, so I guess it's not time to do that yet. But in seeding, overseeding now, you also just mentioned late April. So if I put down the pre-emergent in some areas, okay, and or in most of the lawn, except for where I want to use the want to run a further seed at different sections that are light. Just don't do the pre-emergent there, or do the pre-emergent and rough it up, and then put down some some topsoil and compost and organic material, and then put the grass seed down. Is that something that would seem correct?
I would say you're better off just to wait for 30 days after you put the pre-emergent down. But are you sure there's not any, because the forsythia is blooming in lots of different areas. I don't know exactly where you live.
I'm in University City and I haven't seen any. So, but I mean, I've already bought the product. You think it's safe enough to put it down now?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, then I'll put that down. And then wait for 30 days to do the 30 days to do the overseeding.
Yeah, the regular grass seeding.
Okay, and I do have some currently, and my front lawn is looking really great, but I got some clover. Should I just wait to do some weed and feed later on with that, or?
Well, weed and feed, I don't know if that's going to kill your clover. You could try it, but clover is pretty tough stuff.
Okay, so what do you suggest I use for that?
You'd probably use an herbicide, a broadleaf weed killer, and spray it right onto the clover.
Okay, all right. And I could do that at any time, even now?
Yeah, right.
Looking great. Looks very green now. Okay, very good. Well, thank you very much, sir. Appreciate your service.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's head over to Bill's yard. Bill, how are you from Centralia?
Yeah, I was lucked out and found a leafing out Nimrod grape, two of them. So I won't have to worry about whether the buds will fall off or whatever. So when should I plant that? I didn't plant it yesterday because it got 29 here, so.
Well, I would get it in the ground as soon as you possibly can.
Okay. Well, I didn't know. I didn't want it to freeze up and all that.
Well, generally the soil's not going to freeze, so you shouldn't have too much of a worry about it.
Okay, and then even though it's been swampy.
Yeah, if it's really wet, I wouldn't put it in an area that's really wet because they're not going to do well in a wet area.
Okay. And then the second question I have is, what should I do with straw that has been kept out in the rain somebody gave me?
I would say give it back to them.
Okay.
It's probably full of mold. If you take that thing apart, you're probably going to start sneezing and coughing and, not good.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. And let's see if we can get one more call in. Elaine lives in Cedar Hill. Elaine, can you do it quickly?
Yes, I just have a quick question about my crepe myrtle. Do I prune off those dead pods before it starts growing out?
Yeah, I mean, that's aesthetic. You can prune them off. They're going to fall off anyway, but yes, you can prune them.
But you don't have to do that.
No, you do not have to.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I don't think we're going to be able to get another call in. But I want to warn everybody, we're all, a lot of questions about chemicals and this and pre-emergence and that and everything else. Regardless if it's fertilizer, regardless if it's an herbicide, regardless of anything that you're putting into your landscape or on your houseplants or anything else, always read the label first. It's really crucial. Reread it, too, and read it till you understand. If it's a product you've never used before, wherever you're purchasing it, talk to the staff members there and get their insight, because that is going to make a huge difference. A lot of times, by not reading, just assuming this is going to work this way, or whatever it happens to be, that's not necessarily going to be the case. So whether it's, doesn't matter what it is, just read the labels. Spend some time. Make sure exactly, and follow those directions too. Those directions are a result of years of testing before the product was even made available. So just keep doing that. Existing mulch, certainly take a leaf rake or a garden rake out, depending upon, and just kind of loosen it up, because all the rain and the wintertime and everything else it's kind of gotten compacted a little bit. And sometimes it can kind of get hard enough that consequently the rain, when it hits, won't soak down through it as well as it should. So just loosen it up. It changes the color a little bit. And that's going to be to the advantage of the mulch just in general, which advantage to the mulch just means the advantage to your plant material. If you're getting new mulch, I'm going to repeat this. Perennials, ground covers, and things like that, 1 to 2 inches is the maximum. Trees and shrubs, 2 to 4 inches, and don't pile it up on the stems or bark or the trunks of trees, because that can be to the disadvantage of your trees, your shrubs, or any kind of woody plant material. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline. I appreciate everybody having me on your show, and I will see you next week.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.